welcome to another episode. This week, as you can probably see, we're going to be doing it about Ned Kelly. Originally, I was going to do it about Dan Kelly, I think is his name, who I think is one of his brothers, because apparently that's a really good Wikipedia entry. But I thought, I'm pretty sure Ned Kelly's... I don't know anything about Ned Kelly. I'm going to be completely honest with you from the beginning. I think Ned Kelly was the original, the head guy. And I can't really just do it about, the second most head guy. Got to do it about the top dog. Although I did kind of do that with Commodore Nut. Maybe I'll do one about Tom Thumb. That's assuming that I put that out. Anyway, on with the show. Ned Kelly. Edward Ned Kelly, June 1855 to 11th November 1880, is Australia's most famous bushranger. He has become a symbolic figure in Australian history, folklore, books, art, and movies. As a national icon, his image was used during the opening ceremony of the 2000 Summer Olympics in Sydney. Really? Interesting. He is remembered in the saying, "as game as Ned Kelly," the word game in this case meaning brave. While he was growing up, his family was often in trouble with the police. After fighting a policeman at his home in 1878, Kelly went to the bush to hide. He murdered three policemen who were searching for him. The government made Ned, his brother, and two friends outlaws. They became known as the Kelly Gang. Ned Kelly led the gang to rob a number of banks and even capture a whole town. Final violent fight with police took place at Glen Rowan. Kelly, dressed in homemade metal armour and helmet, was captured and sent to trial. Found guilty, he was hanged at the Melbourne Gaol in 1880. A painting of Kelly by Australian artist Sidney Nolan was sold in 2010 for $5.4 million, the highest price ever paid for an Australian painting. Wow. I don't get, is he just an outlaw? He's just a guy who killed some policemen. Doesn't seem like the kind of person who should be used as an icon for the opening of the Summer Games, the Summer Olympics, but... I just want to point out that under his picture on the right it says born, died, the date, and then cause of death, it just says death. Early life. I think it's Beveridge or Beaveridge. Edward Ned Kelly was born in Canada, north of Melbourne, in June 1855. The actual date is not known because the birth was not registered on the government list of births, deaths, and marriages in Victoria. His prison records give the date as 1856. He was the son of Irish Catholic priests John Red Kelly and Ellen Quinn. Red Kelly had been a convict who had been sent to Van Diemen's Land in 1842 for stealing two pigs. That is such an 1842 crime, stealing two pigs. He moved to Victoria in 1848. He met Ellen Quinn, who had come to Victoria from Ireland with her family in 1841. Red started working for Ellen's mother, James Quinn, who was a farmer at Beveridge. Ned was probably born at his grandfather's house. around 1860, Red built a small house for his family, which is still standing in Kelly Street, Avenel. When Ned was about 9, his father moved the family to a new farm at Avenel. Ned saved a young boy, Richard Shelton, from drowning in Hughes Creek. The Shelton family, who owned the Royal Mail Hotel, gave Ned a sash made from green silk for his bravery. The sash was 230 centimeters long and 14 centimeters wide. Why do we need to know this? He was wearing this sash under his armor when he was captured at Glenrowan. Wow. The sash, still covered in Ned Kelly's blood, is now kept at the Benalla Museum. Red was not a successful farmer and was soon arrested for stealing cattle. In May 1866, he was given 1 month in prison and had to pay a fine of £25. Red died on the 27th of December 1866 and is buried in the Avenel Cemetery. Greta. Ellen Kelly moved the family to Greta. There were other members of Ellen's family living in the area. Her father, James Quinn, had moved from Beveridge to a large farm called Glenmore on the King River in northeast Victoria. Her sisters, Catherine and Jane, and their 10 children were farming at Greta. Their husbands, brothers John and Thomas Lloyd, were in prison for stealing cattle. It's amazing that anybody had cattle at any point, as everybody seems to just be stealing it from everybody else. When Ellen came to Greta, her brothers, James, William and John Quinn, moved from Glenmore to help the sisters and their families. Some of the Quinn family had also been sent to prison for cattle stealing. Of course. James, Ellen's brother, had been charged 10 times for, you guessed it, cattle stealing. In 1868, Red Kelly's brother, James Kelly, came to visit Ellen. He got drunk and, after an argument with the sisters, tried to burn their house down. He was given the death penalty, but this was later changed to 15 years in prison. The police thought the whole family were troublemakers and criminal. Ellen Kelly and her children moved to a farm on the 11 Mile Creek between Greta and Glenrowan. Ned Kelly started work cutting down trees, breaking in horses, herding cattle, and putting up fences. Thank you. Gaol. On the 14th of October 1869, 14-year-old Ned was arrested for stealing money from a Chinese man. Kelly spent 10 days in the police station lockup, but there was not enough proof to send Ned to court, and he had to be set free. Ned also worked in the bush with ex-convict Harry Power. Power had escaped from a Melbourne gaol and started bush ranging. Kelly was arrested in May 1817 for helping Power to rob people. He was kept in the gaol in Kington for 7 weeks. Soon after this, Ned was in trouble again with his uncle, Jack Lloyd. Ned had got into a fight with a hawker, brackets, a travelling salesman. They then sent a rude letter and some calf's testicles to the hawker's wife. In October 1870, he was sent to Beechworth Gaol for assault and for being rude to a lady. Assault and being rude to a lady. He spent 5 months in gaol. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. Gaol, G-A-O-L. If not, you're going to be very annoyed because I have to say it about 5 more times at least. Just 3 weeks after getting out of gaol in April 1871, 16-year-old Ned was arrested again. He had ridden a friend's horse into Greta. He did not know that his friend, Isaiah Wild Wright, had stolen the horse from the Mansfield post office. There was a fight when a policeman, Constable Hall, tried to arrest him. Hall tried to shoot Kelly 3 times, but his gun would not work, so he hit him over the head with it instead. Kelly was sent to Pentridge Gaol in Melbourne. After 4 months, he was moved to the prison ship Sacramento at Williamstown. Prison ships were old ships that were used as extra prison space. Prisoners from the Sacramento worked during the day building a seawall at Williamstown Beach. They also worked on building a fort for the guns that were protecting Port Phillip Bay. Kelly was released from prison on 2nd February 1874. In August, Kelly met his friend Wild Wright in Beechworth. He must have been angry with Wright because of the stolen horse which had put him in prison. Behind the Imperial Hotel, they fought a bare-knuckle boxing match that lasted for 20 rounds. Who was keeping track of these rounds? Wright said later that he gave me the hiding of my life. In September 1877, Kelly was arrested in Benalla for being drunk, riding on a footpath and resisting arrest. Kelly escaped from the police while they were taking him to the courthouse. After a fight with the police, he ran across the road into a boot shop and locked the door. Kelly gave himself up when the judge came over to the shop. One of the policemen involved in the fight to arrest Kelly was Thomas Lonergan. Lonergan was later shot dead by Kelly at Stringy Bark Creek. The Fitzpatrick Incident. Constable Fitzpatrick was in charge of a small police station in Greta. Because of the Kelly family's long history of criminal activity, Police Superintendent C.H. Nicholson had given orders that police were not to go to the Kelly's house alone. But Fitzpatrick decided he would fix the Greta mob. In April 1878, he went to the house to arrest Ned's brother, Dan Kelly, for horse stealing. Dan had only been recently let out of prison. Fitzpatrick was probably drunk, as he had stopped at the Winton Hotel to drink brandy. Dan Kelly refused to go back to the station with Fitzpatrick because the policeman did not have a warrant, the official document needed to make an arrest. Fitzpatrick then tried to make Kate, Ned's 15-year-old sister, sit on his knee so he could kiss her. This started a fight with members of the family, and Fitzpatrick hurt his wrist. He and Ellen, Kate's mother, agreed to forget what had happened, But when Fitzpatrick went back to the Benalla police station, he said that Ned had shot at him three times, and Ethan Kelly had hit him on the head with a shovel. Fitzpatrick lost his job with the police in 1881 after the head of the police force said he was a liar. Wow, I love that they're trusting this man, this constable, over this Kelly family who are known troublemakers. It's quite funny. He must have lied a lot. A group of police led by Sergeant Steele went back to Greta and arrested Ellen Kelly with her baby Alice King. Her son-in-law, William Skillion, and a neighbour, William Bricky Williamson. Why has everybody got a weird name? And a neighbour, William Bricky Williamson, for the attempted murder of Constable Fitzpatrick. Ned and Dan Kelly were not at the house and could not be arrested. Ellen Kelly said that Ned was not involved and that he was working 400 miles away. After a trial in Beechworth, Ellen Kelly was sentenced by Judge Redmond Barry to 3 years in prison for trying to kill Constable Fitzpatrick. Skillion and Williamson were given 6 years in prison. What? The police offered a reward of £100 for the capture of the Kelly brothers. In 1881, Williamson was let out of prison and given a full pardon because the government knew that he was innocent. So how long was he in jail for? It just says in 1881 he was released, but it doesn't say when he was actually locked up. Okay. The Kelly Gang. Stringy Bark Creek. Ned and Dan Kelly went into hiding in the bush. They were later joined by two friends, Joe Byrne and Steve Hart. On the 25th of October, 1878, two groups of police set out to find the Kellys. They knew the two brothers were hiding in the Wombat Ranges, a mountain range between Greta and Mansfield. One group started south from Greta, led by Senior Constable Strahan. Strahan said he would shoot the Kellys down like dogs. A second group led by... Sorry, I've just never understood that phrase. I'm going to shoot you like a dog. Who's shooting dogs in the first place? Why would you shoot a dog? Even back in those days, I don't see why you would shoot a dog unless it's like an old yeller putting them out of their misery thing. Maybe that's what it means. A second group led by Sergeant Michael Kennedy set off from Mansfield heading north. Three other policemen were with him. Constables Thomas McIntyre, Thomas Lonergan, and Michael Scanlon. They set up a camp at Stringy Bark Creek in the thick forest area. Kennedy and Scanlon went searching for the Kellys, while Lonergan and McIntyre remained at the camp. The Kellys were living in a hut nearby at Bullock Creek. They heard noises and discovered the police camp. They decided to capture the policemen and take their guns and horses. Ned and Dan went to the police camp and told them to surrender. Constable McIntyre put his arms up, but Lonergan got out his gun. Ned Kelly shot him dead. When the other two police returned to camp, McIntyre told them to surrender. When Scanlon went for his gun, Kelly also shot him dead. Kennedy ran shooting from tree to tree with Kelly chasing him. Kelly shot him twice, in the armpit and in the chest. Kelly later said that Kennedy appeared to be suffering very much and in great agony. I did not wish to leave him alone to linger out in such pain. Ned put his gun against Kennedy's chest and shot him again. Ned Kelly went back to the camp to get Kennedy's cloak, which he then placed over the body. McIntyre escaped during the confusion and went back to Mansfield to tell everyone what had happened. The Victorian government passed a law on the 30th of October 1878 to make the Kelly Gang outlaws. This meant they no longer had any legal rights and could be shot by anyone. Wow. Anyone who could capture any member of the gang, alive or dead, would be paid a reward of £500, or £2,000 for all four men. Well, that's not a very good deal. It's the same, whatever. All this time, the police did not know that Hart and Byrne were members of the gang. Oh. Wait, what? So the six? Oh, whatever. The gang were seen at several places around northeast Victoria. They tried to cross the Murray River to go into the New South Wales, but the water was too deep. Police had several large groups hunting for them. Euroa. On 10th of December 1878, the gang robbed the Australian National Bank at Euroa. They had stopped at Faithful Creek Station, a farm, and held the people there prisoners. They locked 22 people, including farm workers, hawkers, again, brackets, travelling salesmen, don't think we needed that again, and visitors, into a storeroom. Joe Byrne kept guard while the rest of the gang went into Euroa. They went to the bank and said they had a message for Macaulay, the farm manager. They got into the bank and held up the bank's manager, Robert Scott, along with two tellers. After taking all the money, the gang forced Scott, his wife, family, maids, and tellers to go with them back to Faithful Creek. They were locked up with the other hostages. The outlaws gave a display of horse riding and tricks, which entertained and surprised their hostages. After having supper and telling the people not to leave the farm for another 3 hours, the gang left. The crime was carried out without injury, and the gang stole £2,000. Put on a little show, that's very cool. Gerildery. The police increased the reward on the Kelly gang. More police were sent to guard banks in the country. Friends of the Kellys were locked in Gowal. The gang crossed the Murray River and rode 60 kilometres north into New South Wales. They arrived in Gerildery on Saturday the 8th of February 1879. They broke into the local police station and locked the two policemen, Richards and Devine, in the police cells. The outlaws put on police uniforms and mixed with the local people. They said that they were extra police from Sydney who had come to guard the town from the Kelly gang. Ned Kelly took his horse to the blacksmith to get new horseshoes and told the man to send the bill to the New South Wales police force. On Monday, the gang rounded up various police and forced them into the back room of the Royal Mail Hotel, while Dan Kelly and Steve Hart kept the hostages busy with drinks on the house. Free drinks. That brackets free drinks, that's what that means, by the way. Ned Kelly and Joe Byrne went to the telegraph office and cut down some of the poles and cut the wires. They then went and robbed the local bank of about £2,414, about exactly £2,414. Kelly also burned all the townspeople's mortgage deeds in the bank. When the gang left the town, they were singing about two earlier bush rangers, Ben Hall and Dan Morgan. Hurrah for the good old times of Morgan and Ben Hall. Cool. The Gerildery letter. Months before going to Gerildery, and with help from Joe Byrne, Ned Kelly dictated a long letter, 56 pages. The letter told his story about how he became a bushranger and the treatment of his family by the police. It also told the story of the treatment of Irish Catholics by the police and the English and Irish Protestant farmers. He even said there might be a revolution by people in northeast Victoria to set up their own republic. The Gerildery letter, as it is called, is probably not called that because I'm pronouncing it wrong, but as it is called, is a document of about 8,300 words and has become a famous piece of Australian literature. Kelly had written an earlier letter on the 14th of December 1878 to Donald Cameron, a member of the Parliament of Victoria, but it had been ignored. The Geraldry letter was never published. Kelly tried to find the editor of the local newspaper and get him to print the letter. He finally gave the letter to Edward Living, a teller at the bank. Living kept the letter, which was not rediscovered until 1930. It was then published by the Melbourne Herald. The handwritten letter was given to the State Library of Victoria in 2000. Kelly's words are colourful, rough, and full of metaphors. He said the police were big, ugly, fat-necked, wombat-headed, big-bellied, magpie-legged, narrow-hipped, splay-footed sons of Irish bailiffs or English landlords. That's brilliant. Last stand. Glen Rowan. The gang decided that Aaron Sherritt, Joe Byrne's best friend, was a police spy. On the night of the 26th of June, 1880, Dan Kelly and Joe Byrne went to Sherritt's house in the Woolshed Valley, near Beechworth, and killed him. The four policemen who were protecting him at the time hid under the bed and did not report the murder until the next day. The outlaws knew that the police would send extra men to Beechworth by train to capture them. So he was a police informant, but they just hid all four policemen hid under a bed, not doing anything. Wow. Ned Kelly and Hart arrived in Glen Rowan on the 27th of June and took 70 hostages at the Glen Rowan Inn. They knew that a train loaded with police was on its way. They forced railway workers at Glen Rowan to pull up the rail tracks to make the train crash. The bushrangers, wearing homemade armour, would then capture any of the policemen that were alive after the crash. With the police out of the way, the Kelly gang would then go into Benalla and rob the bank. The captured police would be released when Ellen Kelly, William Williamson, William Skillian were let out of gaol. But the plan to derail the police train failed. The police protecting Aaron Sherritt were too scared to leave his hut, and the murder was not reported until the next day. It's still incredible. The Kellys had to wait 24 hours longer for the police train than they had planned. The hostages were becoming difficult to control. To keep them amused, the outlaws held a dance in the hotel, where Kelly danced a quadrille with Jane Jones, daughter of the hotel owner. They also had sporting events, including the hop, step, and jump. Kelly used two revolvers as extra weights while taking part in the jumping. A local school teacher, Thomas Curnow, talked Ned into letting him take his family home. As soon as he was free, Curnow went down to the railway line, waving a lantern wrapped in his red scarf. The train stopped safely. The 46 police quickly left the train and placed themselves around the hotel so that the Kelly gang was trapped inside. The gang members put on their armour made from plough parts. All four had helmets. Each man's armour was quite heavy. Ned's weighed 41.4 kilograms, which was about half his body weight. The police fired their guns into the building for 7 hours. It's estimated that 15,000 bullets were fired during the shooting. That is crazy. Why did they even bring 15,000 bullets? The police ordered a cannon from Melbourne so that they could destroy the inn, but it would take too long to arrive, so they set fire to the building instead. This is insanity. At dawn on Monday the 28th of June, Ned Kelly came out of the inn wearing his armour. He marched towards the police, firing his gun at them. Their bullets bounced off his armour. Sergeant Steele shot him in his legs that were not protected by armour. Joe Byrne died in the front room from loss of blood because a gunshot cut his femoral artery. Dan Kelly and Steve Hart may have killed themselves as their bodies were found lying side by side in a back room with their heads on blankets. They had taken off their armor and it was found next to them. Several hostages were shot and three died, including 13-year-old Jack Jones, the son of the hotel owner. Martin Cherry, a railway worker, was rescued from the burning hotel but died soon afterwards. George Metcalf, a quarry worker, who was forced to pull up the railway line, died later from injuries. The police had one small injury. The police superintendent, Francis Hare, received a wound to his wrist, then fled the battle. The Royal Commission set up to examine the Kelly Gang later removed Hare from the Victoria Police. Trial and execution. Ned Kelly was taken to the Melbourne Gaol, where he was treated for his wounds. He was visited by his mother, who was in the same prison for wounding Constable Fitzpatrick. In August, he was taken back to Beechworth by train for his first court hearings. The court agreed that Kelly would be tried in court for the murder of Thomas Lonergan and Michael Scanlon at Stringy Bark Creek. The government thought people around Beechworth might not find Kelly guilty of the crimes, and so they had the trial moved to Melbourne. At the trial, the jury found Kelly guilty of both murders. He was sentenced to death by the Irish-born judge, Sir Redmond Barry, with the words, "May God have mercy on your soul." Kelly said, "I will go a little further than that, and say I will see you there when I go." Many people did not agree with the death sentence. A petition with more than 60,000 names asked the government for mercy. Ned Kelly was hanged on the 11th of November 1880 at the Melbourne Gaol for murder. Several newspapers, including The Age and The Herald, reported Kelly's last words as, "Such is life." Sir Redmond Barry died after a short illness on the 23rd of November 1880, only 12 days after Kelly's death. Reburial and recent DNA testing. Ned Kelly was buried in an unmarked grave at the Melbourne Gaol, in an area with other criminals who had also been hanged at the Gaol. Bones of 32 people were dug up in 1929 when the Gaol was being redeveloped and reburied at Pentridge Gaol in Coburg, Victoria. The burial site at Pentridge was rediscovered in 2008. DNA testing has proved that one set of bones was the skeleton of Ned Kelly. Experts from the Victorian Institute of Forensic Medicine said that the DNA clearly matches one of Kelly's living relatives. The bones show some of the injuries Kelly got during the shootout with the police. The Kelly skeleton does not have a skull. a skull said to be Kelly's was found during the digging at the Gaol in 1929. It was put on display at the Old Melbourne Gaol, but it was stolen in 1978. On the anniversary of Ned Kelly's hanging, on the 11th of November 2009, a farmer from Western Australia gave a skull back to Heritage Victoria, which he said had been taken from the Gaol. It was tested for DNA to see if it was Ned Kelly's skull. These tests showed it was not, and the location of Kelly's skull is still unknown. Interesting. In 2013, the Victorian government finally gave Kelly's remains to his family. A funeral service was held at St. Patrick's Church, Wangaratta, on the 18th of January 2013. During the service, family members who read from the Bible wore a green silk sash. Relatives of Constable Michael Scanlon and Aaron Sherritt also attended the service. Kelly was buried in an unmarked grave at Greta on the 20th of January 2013. Why an unmarked grave? Oh. The DNA that was recovered from Ned's skeleton was mitochondrial DNA. That was matched with one of Ned's maternal relations, Ned's great nephew Lee Olver. No adequate quality Y DNA was rediscovered from Ned's bones or has been recovered from any of Ned's known paternal side relatives. Y DNA is passed from father to son. There is a chance that a Y DNA sample may be isolated from Ned's bones one day using more advanced laboratory procedures. However, it is also possible that a Y DNA sample could be taken from the remains of one of Ned's male relatives, such as his father, his uncles, or his brothers. Their graves are all well known. A Y DNA sample would reveal exactly which Kelly line Ned belongs to. Currently, the Kelly surname Y DNA study has the results of over 500 Y DNA samples, but no comparison can be made until a sample from one of Ned's family is obtained. Based on location, the most frequent Kelly line is Southwest Ireland, Tipperary, Clare and Kerry. Kerry is the O'Brien Kelly line. Interesting. The Ned Kelly story. Ned Kelly is still a major part of Australian popular culture. His story has been told in books, movies, plays, and television shows. His image has been used for everything from cakes to tattoos. A recent study showed that people with a Ned Kelly tattoo were 8 times more likely to be murdered. Ooh. In 1980, the Australian Post Office released a set of postage stamps to remember the 100th anniversary of the Siege of Glenrowan. In 2010, the National Gallery of Victoria paid $2.2 million for a painting of Ned Kelly by artist Sidney Nolan. Wait, 2.2, it said at the start, sorry, I'm gonna scroll back to the start, but I'm sure that said 5.2. All right, this is from the start. A painting of Kelly by Australian artist Sidney Nolan was sold in 2010 for $5.4 million. I think we're going to have to look into that in a minute. Sorry, where were we? Yes. It was Nolan's paintings of Ned Kelly that inspired the opening ceremony of the 2000 Summer Olympics in Sydney. In June 2011, the Williamstown Australian Rules Football Club claimed that Ned Kelly had played 11 games for the club in 1873 while serving time in the prison ship. It was also claimed that in 1928 they had found a suit of armour buried on the football ground. That suit of armour, by the way, is very cool. It looks like an old, like, knight's sort of plate mail, but it's made of leather by the looks of it, with a really funny crusader-y looking sort of cylindrical helmet on it. Yeah, it's very cool. And then there's a big list of media that revolves around the Kellys. Books, music, movie and television, theatre, plants. There's a plant called Grevillea Ned Kelly, a small shrub of the Grevillea family, about 2 meters tall, green leaves with orange to red flowers. That's quite nice. I'm just going to look into Sidney Nolan right now and just find out what that says on here. Okay, one of the Kelly paintings not owned by the museum was sold in March 2010 for $5.4 million. That was the highest price ever paid for an Australian painting. So the end of that article isn't correct, quite. But maybe it was a different one. Maybe there's two different ones. Maybe one was 5.4 or whatever and the other was 2.2. Anyway, I think that's enough. Quite an interesting story. Quite a cool guy. Especially like that bit where he burned all the mortgage deeds of the of the people in the town after he robbed the bank. That was like a double whammy. But it was very cool. RIP to all of the policemen that he killed them. Alright, well, thanks very much for listening again. Thanks to whoever wrote this and did a great job. Maybe I'll read the Dan Kelly one in the future, because that was supposed to be the really good one and Dan Kelly wasn't really mentioned too much in this, so maybe it'll be his own separate story. I don't know. But yeah, anyway, thanks for listening. Thanks for all the writers. You're fantastic. And I hope you have a lovely day. Bye.